This is to the best of our knowledge. I'm Anne Strangechamps. When was the last time you felt sheer, uncomplicated, authentic delight? Here's poet Ross Gay.
I was at this writing residency working on this poem that I felt like I would never finish. And I was walking back from town, sort of walking in a path between two farms and back to this castle where I was. It was actually a castle that we were staying in. There are tons of sunflower fields in that region. Acres and acres of sunflowers leaning toward the sky, and the linden trees, they just get hovering with bees, and there were singing to me, and everything else was just heavenly. All these wildflowers also kind of humming with bees, and I thought that this is delightful. I realized, I'm kind of theorizing what delight is in some kind of way, which is to say, like, the edges of delight. Why do I feel delight, or how it occurs, or what might be entailed in delight? And I thought, I should write a little essay about how delightful this is. And then I thought it'd be more interesting actually to write an essay every day for a year about something that delighted me. And that was really the way that the book started. And it was clear as a bell that I ought to do it.
I sort of get the feeling at a certain point you felt like you were just drowning in delight, which seems wonderful.
Yeah, totally.
Ross Gay is an award-winning poet. He lives in Bloomington, Indiana, and he just came out with The Book of Delights. Those essays. He wrote them every day over the course of a year, from one birthday to the next. He gave himself a few rules. Notice one delightful thing a day and write about it for 30 minutes by hand. So it became a kind of literary and spiritual practice. And the big takeaway for him was that cultivating joy and delight is not just a solitary pleasure. It actually brings people together. So this hour, we're making the case for the pursuit of pleasure, for the transformative, collective power of joy and delight. So Ross, you want to start us off? What is delighting you today?
Fall feels like it just came today in Bloomington, and there's a smell to that. Or, you know, like the way birds are interacting, or the way, like, when you get close to the ground, if you're gardening, the way the beetles do their thing, or the flowers that you can't see until you see them do their thing, or it's just stacks of delights. But joy is actually the idea that I'm more interested in. The joy is not something that you do by yourself.
You write about it a lot, about how joy is almost a force that brings people together.
That's something over the course of writing the book, as I was sort of thinking about delight and recognizing so often for me, delight is this experience that makes me want to, like, if there's a gesture that the book has, the gesture is elbowing my neighbor. Look at this beautiful thing.
Hey, see that?
Which is right next to saying, elbowing your neighbor and saying, look at this thing that I love. Which is right next to saying, share this thing I love with me. To do that as a practice, what happens if we sort of grow that as a practice? There's a pear tree at the end of the street where we live. And they're the best pears from any tree I've ever eaten, and it never has disease. It's just incredibly abundant, beautiful, delicious fruit. And we were going to be making applesauce and pear sauce, and so we were harvesting and using a big old apple picker, pear picker. And within, you know, shortly, because it's a tree and it casts shade and it makes fruit, there are 8 or 9 people just hanging out under the tree, looking at the fruit, sharing the fruit. And I thought, that's it. That's actually the truth. You know, that's like the truth. I'm so interested in the ways that we gather around what we love. I'm so interested in that.
But at the same time, there's another kind of sharing we do a lot these days where we say, let me share this thing I hate with you.
It's a lot of that going on. Yeah. I mean, I don't know, like I have an answer to that, but I do feel like you labor to expand the good. You labor to expand the care. You labor to expand what we love.
It's really interesting that you use the word labor too, because I think we have this, maybe this misperception that joy and delight are easy. You know, there's this whole focus on happiness. You know, in America, every place you go, people are always saying, have a great day.
Yeah, yeah.
It seems like you're saying joy and delight are something you actually have to work at.
It's rigorous, more rigorous, I think, than misery. But it also is not like have a good day. And it's not like a happiness journal. To me, joy is as much about being able to hold each other's sorrows as it is having a good day.
Joy is connected to grief?
I don't think you have joy without grief. I don't think you have joy without sorrow, without our lives.
Why? Why don't we have joy without grief? Because we tend to think of those as complete opposites.
I know. And I think it's a sort of immature notion of actually a very adult and rigorous emotion. An emotion that understands that you and I are both going to die. You know? At least one part of us, of our connection, is that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because it does feel like there's a kind of commercial or kind of American notion of joy, you know? Yeah, you know, like, joy, go buy a truck.
And at the same time, the planet is burning, species are dying, there's gun violence and inequality and suffering everywhere. And it kind of feels like, well, how can we sit around and talk about how great joy is?
I don't think one closes off the other. That's the thing. And in some way, I feel like studying and attending to what you love and sharing what you love is one of the ways of responding to what is brutal and what is awful.
Hmm. So we've been talking about delight and joy. We have not yet talked about sexual delight, erotic pleasure, the kind of delight that registers on the skin. That must also be part of your catalog of delights.
Yeah, sure. Totally.
So, like many, maybe even most women, I feel like learning to take authentic, joyful pleasure in my body has been something I had to find my way to, something I had to claim. And partly, I think, because as a woman, I'm born into a culture that has a very long history of disapproving of women's bodies and women's sexuality. But the more I thought about it, the more I thought, well, it's not just women.
Yeah.
You're a Black man. At some level, this must register for you almost every day in the same way it does for me.
It's funny. I'm thinking of this one little essay in the book called Cocoa Baby. And in it, I'm sort of talking about putting coconut oil on my body. And I kind of have this whole process of thinking about it. It's sort of very vulnerable. It's really about taking delight in the very simple and tender pleasure of putting oil on my body, all of my body. And I read that once to a bunch of kids. You know, I didn't realize, just like, it's a good delight. It's a good essay. And I read it and the kids were like, I got to a point where I mentioned parts of my body and they're like, no! And I was like, oh, yeah, right. This is a kind of an adult delight. This is not like, but it is sort of like, I think the last line of it, I'm sort of witnessing that I'm sort of hugging myself in the process of putting oil on myself, trying to get it on my back and stuff. When you're doing that, it's easy to see yourself as a child and a child that you really love. This expression of like, care for this body that's not long for this earth. A body that I also spend a lot of time policing, and I also am not necessarily kind to. Yeah.
One of my favorite essays, and it's this moment that stayed with me. You're on a plane. Often you're on a plane.
Mm-hmm.
You're on a plane, and a flight attendant hands you a glass of water and touches you.
Yeah.
Would you mind reading it?
I'll read it. Yeah, sure. Tap, tap. I take it as no small gesture of solidarity and, more to the point, love, or even more to the point, tenderness, when the brother working as a flight attendant, maybe about 50, the beginning of gray in his fade, his American Airlines vest snug on his sturdily built torso, walking backward in front of the cart, after putting my seltzer on my tray table, said, "There you go, man," and tapped my arm twice. Tap, tap. Oh, let me never cease extolling the virtues and my adoration of the warranted familiarity. You see family in that word, don't you, family? Expressed by a look or tone of voice, or today on this airplane between Indianapolis and Charlotte. Those are real places, lest we forget. A tap, two, tap, tap, on the triceps. By which, it's really a kind of miracle, was expressed a social and bodily intimacy. On this airplane, at this moment in history, our particular bodies making the social contract of mostly not touching each other irrelevant, or rather, writing a brief addendum that acknowledges the official American policy, which is a kind of de facto and terrible touching of some of us, or trying to, always figuring out ways to keep touching us. And as flight attendant, tap, tap, reminding me, like that, simply remember, tap, tap, how else we might be touched, and are. There you go, man.
Oh, that's so beautiful.
Thank you.
Is there a practice you could leave us with? For those of us listening who are thinking, I want to build my joy muscles.
I don't know if it's a practice, but I would say figure out the way that we can, let's figure out the way that we can reach out and share what we love, you know, something like that.
As opposed to reaching out and share what we hate.
Yes.
Which has put us all in a very bad place.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you very, very much.
You're very welcome.
Ross Gay is a poet, and he teaches at Indiana University in Bloomington. He won the National Book Critics Circle Award for his catalog of unabashed gratitude, and we were talking about his brand new collection of essays called The Book of Delights.